Hello, Doug Brown joining Brendan Stone today on Unusual Sources on CFMU, McMaster Radio 93.3 FM. Well, we're going to start this show with a look at the issue of migratory workers here in Ontario and across Canada. We've been following this issue for a few years now. Canada has tens of thousands of people coming primarily from Mexico and the Caribbean, working on our farms for, you know, low wages and hard work, sometimes dangerous conditions. So we're going to be talking to Stan Raper. He's with United Food and Commercial Workers and also with the Agricultural Workers Alliance. Stan, are you there?
Yes, I am, Doug.
Well, thank you for joining us. And Stan, I think there's a fair bit going on right now with this situation of seasonal workers, foreign workers. There's been some hearings. I think you've been involved in this.
Yes, there's quite a bit going on in regards to the Temp Foreign Workers Program. The federal government announced that it was going to be doing a review of the whole program, and that they were going to be also including the Caregivers Program and the Seasonal Agriculture Workers Program. And so it's the 50th anniversary of the Seasonal Agriculture Worker Program in Canada, and being bundled under the Temp Foreign Worker Program, we don't think 50 years is temporary. And so UFCW Canada, in fact, Naveen Mehta from our Human Rights Department presented last Friday with a Temp Foreign Worker from Manitoba who works in our meatpacking plant and has become a Canadian citizen through access through the Provincial Nominees Program, presented and talked about some of the difficulties and issues around the Temp Foreign Worker Program and UFCW and Canadians in general.
Okay. what's your take on what's been happening with the hearings in Ottawa?
Well, I think there's kind of two opinions. There's one that is saying that, you know, they've announced that they're doing this review, and it's been fairly quick in terms of being set up and allowing people to make presentations. And so when you do things quickly, you sometimes eliminate people from the process. And I think there's been some complaints that certain individuals and temporary foreign workers themselves and some of the organizations who are advocating on their behalf have not had proper say or proper input into the process, and so that has been raised. Also, when you do things quickly, you seem to be rushed in the process, and it doesn't give you often a lot of time to reflect and have some debate. But I think that there's been a lot of discussion around the Temp Foreign Worker Program, some good, some bad, and you know, I'm personally pleased that the current federal government is reviewing the Temp Foreign Program. It's indicating that they are going to issue a report within 120 days or like 3 to 4 months. So it looks like there could be potentially some changes to the program as early as the fall of this year, which compared to our last government, we seem to be now going in the right direction, at least when they call for a review and identified issues around the four in and four out, so you could only stay for 4 years, and a number of issues around status or path to citizenship, what type of work permits people are being issued, are a number of the main issues that are being raised across the country to the federal government.
Yeah, and I've noticed the mainstream media is giving some coverage to the issue, which hasn't always been the case in the past. Thomas Walcombe did an article a while ago, and maybe you can give some background to this, because he was critical of the Liberal government, saying that they've quietly relaxed the rules for seasonal foreign labor. What did he mean by that?
Well, I think what he was talking about was that they're not enforcing really the four in, four out, because they've announced this review, and they've also relaxed the rules. The Conservative government moved from 10% to 20%, from 20% to 10%, the percentage of temp foreign workers that could be allowed in your workforce. And again, because the review is underway, enforcement of those programs is not being conducted. And so if you have a plant of 100 people, initially you could have 20% of the workforce being temp foreign workers in some sectors. And they wanted to change it to 10 because employers were becoming too reliant on temp foreign workers, and unemployment rates were increasing in some provinces. And so there was a lot of discussion about limiting or trying to put a percentage on it. And that article in particular criticized that removing the percentage piece provided employers an opportunity to continue to keep the workforce they had. And so you can read into that however you want. Certainly employers have been very concerned about how quickly this process has all started, and potentially how quick changes may be coming, and are very concerned about their ability then to access workers to fill a void that was specifically filled by temporary foreign worker programs. And you can imagine when there's, over 500,000 temp foreign workers in Canada, the employers who brought those workers in are going to be very concerned if the program is stopped or adjusted in big ways, how they're going to continue to keep their plants or factories or whatever it is running. And so they're voicing their concerns as well.
Yeah, and it always relates back to the question that there are a lot of Canadians that if the working conditions and pay were better, there'd be lineups for these jobs.
Yeah. I think part of the problem with the guest worker programs or the Americanization of the temp foreign worker programs from the U.S. into Canada, and I think those are the policies that we're seeing now, and the impacts that it has is employers become reliant, almost addicted to an immediate workforce that they can bring from anywhere in the world, instead of trying to train people who are unemployed or coming out of college or university or from whether from high school. I mean, and the benefits and wages and working conditions have spiraled to the point where a lot of Canadians don't want to do certain types of work. Whose fault is that? I think policies of the federal government used to be around immigration. And, you know, people would immigrate to Canada and bring their families and find work that they thought was good work and hard work, but you were compensated appropriately in order to survive and feed your family. With the temp foreign workers and guest worker programs, we question whether, a reliance on that workforce and minimum wage, no benefit types of workforces really help to build our nation and build our capacity to continue to grow, or these are temporary measures. We need to revisit, where these guest worker programs are going and whether there's a place in Canadian society and the economy for these types of guest worker programs.
Yeah, it'd be nice if there was a light at the end of the tunnel, because it's must be a very, very hard life and existence for the temporary workers. For the most part, I think they're separated from their families.
Yeah.
Long periods of time.
Yeah, well, potentially up to 4 years with the four in, four out. They put a cap on it, and really it's 48 months, but you could get a 2-year work permit and then get another extended 2-year work permit. And so, potentially a temporary foreign worker would be in Canada for 4 years, separated from their families, and be able to phone or write or whatever to their families. But they're providing for their family, and yes, they are making a wage and sending remittances back to their home countries, but the social impacts of family members being away from their families for 4 years, it's unconscionable to most of us. I think also, causes other social and economic problems that very few people are calculating.
Right. And I had a look at one of the submissions to the committee. I won't repeat the committee's name on air, because I think it's about the longest committee name I've ever seen. It must have at least 20 words in it.
Yes.
But in this one submission I saw, in fact, there was a very good request dealing with this long separation, that there should be provision for the foreign worker to go back and, visit with his family or bring his family here, so that they don't, it's still long periods of separation, but not quite so bad as it is now.
Well, I think, the way we used to do, again, was through immigration, and if employers needed work or our country needed workers, we would go and seek people out who wanted to work and bring their families here, and that's how we built our nation to be what it is, right? And so when you change to these kind of cycling through workers from every country in the world, it's all employer-driven, and really there's nothing driving it other than profit. I really start to wonder, is profit everything? What happened to humanity? What happened to, human beings and being with your families? Part of it's not all work, right? We're not machines.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I understand that, yes, there could be work shortages or at certain periods of time within an industry while they're expanding, seeking, skilled workers and things like that. But this thing got blown out of proportion very fast. Within, a 5 to 10 year period, the rates, went up 680%. The point where it was getting ridiculous and out of control, and so the the government got into trouble because media was running these stories about these horrendous abuses of these workers, and rightly so. And so now you see a new government coming in, kind of wanting to clear the deck, and maybe start fresh. And who knows, what the final outcome will be. But, you know, a lot of people are expressing their views as quickly as the process has been. I think a lot of people were ready to jump on this and put their points forward, and hopefully the government's listening.
Yeah, and there's been a good movement about fair trade and being conscious of working conditions of the people that produce goods.
Yeah,
and you know, what seems to be lacking, I think, for Canadians is for homegrown food. There's a lot of labor that's really not being fairly treated and compensated. Like the seasonal workers, working for low pay. They have to be separated from their families. My understanding is that it's very difficult to change employer if you end up with a bad employer.
Yeah.
So the employer has you're almost like an indentured servant. Going back in time. I've been reading articles. One writer suggested it was like modern day slavery,
right,
to some extent. So I wish the public at large would be more conscious. In the buying food, even good Ontario produce, making sure that it really is produced under good working conditions.
Well, there's certainly been a rather big discussion and ongoing debates around local food security. What is fair food? How agribusiness is mass producing and exporting and with minimal consideration to the seasonal workers, the environment, local economies, you name it. And so there is a lot of discussion globally, I think, around the world, around, how we get safe food and how we need to adjust our own expectations around food as Canadians and as global citizens. So, it's certainly it's a very interesting field, and we're trying to advocate for basic worker rights, basic human rights, and fair and safe food. And I think these issues are going to be around a long time, and so hopefully we start to make some progress in these areas.
Yeah, and kudos to you, the Agricultural Workers Association and UFCW, and a number of allied groups that are really doing great work, trying to get the public attention on this issue, get some change in policy, and get some solid improvements in conditions.
Yes, we've really seen an advance in the number of organizations and people, and I think that's all positive and is only going to continue to grow. And I think the more advocates and people looking after Mother Earth, the better.
Yeah, that's for sure. Now, we've talked a bit about the federal side of things. On the provincial side, has there been any movement about the law? Agricultural workers in Ontario cannot form a union.
Well, the Minister of Labour, Mr. Flynn, has announced that they're doing a review, and that review process is ongoing. And I think most of the organizations across the province, from employers and their associations to advocates of workers and labor organizations, have all done their first round of presentations to the two individuals who are traveling across the province, gathering submissions. And I heard that the report was supposed to be out shortly, within the next few weeks or months. There's supposed to be a report to the government, and then they're supposed to kind of fine tune and make recommendations and hopefully lead to legislative changes around the Employment Standards Act and the Labor Relations Act. And of course, agriculture workers, whether they're seasonal foreign workers or the guy down the road, working full time in a mushroom farm or in a hog barn or whatever, all agriculture workers in this province have been excluded from the right to join a union and bargain collectively. And most of the provisions under the Employment Standards Act don't apply to agriculture workers. So we're way behind in terms of basic labor and human rights for a certain sector of workers in this province. And we argue that that's not fair. It's against our charter and constitutional rights. And we've been to the Supreme Court twice, continued to lobby and argue over the last 30 years, trying to secure the rights of agriculture workers in this province. And, the industry so far has won this battle, and I'm hoping that the Wynn government will hear the cry from a number of organizations across the province who made submissions calling for the rights of agriculture workers to be included under the Labor Relations Act and inclusion in the Employment Standards Act.
Yeah, that's definitely should happen, and I understand Quebec has already moved to do just that.
Yes, Alberta just introduced legislation including agriculture workers. So Ontario's the last holdout of all the provinces in Canada. Ontario is the last one not to provide the right to unionization and collective bargaining, and Alberta also is working on new occupational health and safety laws. Our laws in Ontario for farm workers have no regulations, so it's basically toothless, and we're approaching a 10-year anniversary of that legislation, where we were promised regulations would come with that, and 10 years down the road, we still haven't got those. So there's lots of work for our governments to do on the agricultural worker front, both provincially and federally. And, we just keep fighting away, trying to get what basic rights they should have got years ago.
Right. And another right is medical care.
Right.
And as just reading another report, Canadian Medical Association reported that for the 10-year period from 2001 to 2011, 787 workers were sent home for medical reasons.
Right.
So, and there's then a very tragic case that's been in the news a fair bit, Sheldon McKenzie, seasonal worker from Jamaica, suffered a severe injury at work. And
he had a fall in Windsor and hit his head and had bad swelling and ended up dying. And the liaison office, the liaison officers, were trying to repatriate him, medical repatriation, and his family and the family lawyer stepped in and were able to stop that. But a lot of times the medical repatriations happen so quickly, like within, before 24 hours. So a worker gets hurt, they put them on the plane, and they're doing this to avoid workers' compensation claims.
Yeah, so there's another big lack in the rights of these workers. Normally an employee in Ontario gets workman's comp if they're injured on the job.
Yeah, well, if there's an accident at work, it's mandatory that it's reported. And if they're on the plane going home, then no one knows about it. And, they've been able to skirt, media and, medical attention and a number of other things around workers' compensation rates and higher payments and potentially fines. Mm-hmm. That report outlining how many, I would probably argue it's more than 781. Those are the ones that they've been able to try and calculate. But I think the numbers of workers going home injured, not the same as how they arrived. The numbers are probably a lot greater than that. And again, that's, I think, part of the lack of occupational health and safety laws and enforcement and investigations. And because they have not been under the Occupational Health and Safety Act, there's not a culture within the industry, within the agriculture industry in Ontario and elsewhere, dealing with health and safety on the farm or on these big corporate factory farm operations. And so we see a lot of deaths, we see a lot of lost limbs, we see a lot of children hurt. The numbers are really quite staggering, and the workers' compensation rate in Ontario is double every other sector, and still no occupational health and safety laws and regulations to go with that. So there's a lot of work in terms of trying to identify dangers on these farms and trying to educate workers and the employers and their children about those dangers and finding ways to prevent the accidents that are happening. It's not easy, and other sectors have had forced regulation and enforcement for a long time, over 26 years before farm workers even got, the basic right to have a committee and to refuse dangerous work. So there's a lot of work to do in developing a culture of health and safety on the agricultural operations in Ontario.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of work to be done, and you and your colleagues with the AWA and UFCW and other organizations are doing the job. And it's just a matter, maybe we need to get more political pressure maybe on the provincial and federal representatives to...
Yeah, it's rewarding work, and certainly, working with workers from all over the world is always rewarding, but there's always, big challenges and more to do. I keep saying that farm workers are going to win the right to unionize in this province before I die, and I'm hell bent to make sure that happens.
Well, let's hope it does happen. First of all,
I'm getting older faster.
First of all, I want you to have a very, very long life, but yeah. I do hope that these needed changes are made soon, not in a matter of decades or whatever we're looking at right now.
Yes, well, it's been long enough, hasn't it?
It's sure been a long time. Yeah. Okay, well, Stan, thanks again for joining us and updating us on the situation with seasonal agricultural workers.
Anytime, Doug. I'm always happy to talk with you guys.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Stan.
Okay.
And that was Stan Raper. He's with UFCW and also the Agricultural Workers Alliance, and he was speaking to us by phone. So,
Thanks very much, Doug. That was great. We're very pleased to get Stan on such short notice. I know we couldn't quite get him last week, so we came on this time. And, you know, the thing about that, Doug, is we, of course, are having an event in Hamilton, right here in Hamilton, in support of migrant farm workers. It's going to be happening probably September 24th. They'll be arriving on the 23rd or the 24th. There's going to be a solidarity march, and migrant farm workers are actually walking from city to city. They're coming from Toronto to Hamilton, from Toronto to Guelph, city to city in Ontario, walking the distance, which is incredible. But that's the kind of daily struggle they have as migrant workers. So we're organizing a solidarity tour for when they arrive in Hamilton in September, probably the 24th. And you're going to be hearing about that on this program. We're involved in the organizing for that. It's a good event for Hamilton and for us to get to know this issue. So keep your calendars open for September 24th, and there may be events in the lead up to that as well. So you'll be hearing about that here. There'll be interviews and coverage of this migrant worker solidarity tour, this march, this walk from city to city in Ontario. So stay tuned for details on that. We'll be right back.